Welcome back, friends. Welcome back to the Corbett Report. It is March of 2024. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and today I would like to correct an error. An error that comes by way of, well, I was informed by an email from Thomas, who wrote in to say that he had the 2009 USB archive and was going through it and noticed a couple of corrupted files. So I'm going to be providing the, not only in this flashback, so you can watch it here, the actual restored audio perfectly playing files that Thomas was talking about in his email. But also, I will have a special download link on CorbettReport.com so you can download the full 720p version of this video directly from my archives, from my server, so you can have it. So, what are we talking about? We're talking about Al-Qaeda Doesn't Exist, which, if you've been around in the Corbett Report universe for 15 years now, you might remember back in 2009 when I first started releasing the first installments of what was going to be the first feature-length documentary from the Corbett Report before reality set in and my full-time job as an English teacher invaded and intruded upon that plan. And I ultimately abandoned this documentary? Well, no, it lay dormant for another, 12 years or 13 years or so until I started releasing the False Flags, the Secret History of Al-Qaeda documentary. Anyway, you'll remember that because I flashed back in September of 2022, when I was on the cusp of releasing the next installment of the False Flags documentary, I released this flashback from the archives, the prologue to the Al-Qaeda Doesn't Exist documentary, just to remind people that that existed and that it was on the 2009 USB archive. Anyway, in addition to the prologue, there was a part one that was released on YouTube at that time in 2009 in two installments. Well, obviously, my YouTube channel is long since gone. But I did, of course, put the original documentary on the 2009 USB archive in its entirety, the entirety as it existed at that time anyway. But as Thomas points out, the audio of that documentary on the 2009 USB archive is not listenable. It is all chopped up and you can't really actually listen to that. Well, I get it. If you are one of those people who have supported the Corbett Report by purchasing one of or all of or some combination of the USB archives, first of all, thank you. I literally can't do this work without your support. Second of all, thank you for helping to preserve this media in some tangible form that could survive the internet apocalypse or whatever cyber pandemic is coming next. So thank you to all the people who are helping to preserve this information. And as a completionist, presumably, someone who does want, as I always say, every single article, every interview, every video from each year of the Corbett Report website, you might actually want to make sure that they all work. So in the interest of making sure that you have a working copy of this, I'm afraid the USB archives are mass manufactured. The data lock has already happened. I guess somewhere down the line, we can hopefully swap in the correct files. But for now, the 2009 USB archives will have the corrupted audio of this particular video that I'm about to play. So I'm going to play it here for everyone, whether you purchased the 2009 USB archive or not. Anyway, here's the documentary. I will also have a separate link so that you can go and download this video in 720p quality so you have it in the best quality that I have it and that you can swap that into your 2009 USB archive and you can have the truly complete, truly perfect archives in order there. Anyway, all of that is just preamble. Essentially, this is the 2009 version of what eventually became the False Flags documentary. If you haven't seen the False Flags documentary, or if you've already forgotten about it, as I think most people have, that was the 5.5 hour definitive history of Al-Qaeda that I produced a couple of years ago, and I sincerely suggest that you check that one out if you are at all interested in this subject matter. Yes, Al-Qaeda Doesn't Exist was great and cutting edge and wonderful for 2009, but I think the False Flags documentary is a very, 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 very much more detailed and interesting and informative and wonderful documentary, so I hope you'll check that one out. But in the interest of completionism, I am putting this out here. This is part one of what was going to be a continuing documentary that I was going to release in 2009. The rest never got released, but here is the first part of that documentary for your viewing pleasure and for any completionists in the crowd who want to make sure that their 2009 USB archive is in good working order, here it is. If you want any of the USB archives or the DVD version of the False Flags, the Secret History of Al-Qaeda documentary, the 5.5-hour documentary. That's all available at newworldnextweek.com. The links to everything I'm talking about will be in the show notes for this flashback. But without further ado, let's get straight into the flashback from 2009. This is Zbigniew Brzezinski. He was national security advisor to Jimmy Carter. He is currently a top foreign policy advisor to Barack Obama.
He has proven to be an outstanding friend and somebody who I've learned an immense amount from.
And in 1979, he supervised a covert American intelligence operation to fund and train the Afghan Mujahideen that would form the base of Al-Qaeda.
U.S. National Security Advisor Brzezinski flew to Pakistan to set about rallying resistance. He wanted to arm the Mujahideen without revealing America's role. On the Afghan border near the Khyber Pass, he urged the soldiers of God to redouble their efforts.
We know of their deep belief in God, and we are confident that their struggle will succeed. That land over there is yours. You'll go back to it one day because your fight will prevail, and you'll have your homes and your mosques back again because your cause is right and God is on your side.
The CIA involvement with the Afghan Mujahideen, including an estimated $3 to $20 billion of American taxpayer money that was spent by the U.S. to train and equip them, has been known and acknowledged for years. The operation was part of a Cold War gambit to bog down the Red Army in what was to become the Soviet Union's own Vietnam. An unending struggle to occupy a country against a determined and, thanks to the CIA, well-funded and trained guerrilla resistance.
We must recognize the strategic importance of Afghanistan to stability and peace. A Soviet-occupied Afghanistan threatens both Iran and Pakistan and is a stepping stone to possible control over much of the world's oil supplies.
The scheme, known as Operation Cyclone, was in fact an amazing success. The years of guerrilla fighting and thousands of deaths demoralized the Red Army, drained the resources of an already overstrained CCCP, and emboldened citizens in other Soviet satellites to throw off the yoke of communist repression. The Red Army retreated from Afghanistan in 1989, and the Soviet Union fell shortly thereafter. What is hardly ever acknowledged, however, is that the CIA involvement with the Mujahideen did not start after the Soviets entered Afghanistan, but before the invasion took place. This startling admission came directly from Brzezinski himself, who stated in a 1998 interview with a French periodical, "According to the official version of history, CIA aid to the Mujahideen began during 1980, that is to say, after the Soviet Army invaded Afghanistan, 24th of December 1979. But the reality, secretly guarded until now, is completely otherwise. Indeed, it was July 3rd, 1979, that President Carter signed the first directive for secret aid to the opponents of the pro-Soviet regime in Kabul. And that very day,
I wrote a note to the president in which I explained to him that in my opinion this aid was going to induce a Soviet military intervention. This is an important point. What it means is that the CIA did not merely take a pre-existing movement of freedom fighters and aid them in their fight against the Soviets. What it means is that Western intelligence actively recruited Islamist extremists for the express purpose of provocateuring the Soviets into invading. By Brzezinski's own admission, if these Mujahideen had not been fostered by the CIA, the Soviets may never have invaded Afghanistan in the first place. In a very real sense, then, Brzezinski and the U.S. government fostered an extremist element of militant Islamists and helped form them into an effective fighting force. It was from the ranks of these Afghan Mujahideen that another group was to emerge, composed mostly of so-called Arab Afghans, or foreign fighters who came to Afghanistan to take up the jihad against the Soviets. The expulsion of the Soviets from Afghanistan was to be just the first of their battles, and after the Red Army left, their attention was to turn elsewhere. Of course, the geopolitics of the era required that the U.S. not be directly implicated in funding and trading the Mujahideen. Domestically, Americans would have been outraged had they been aware that they were footing the bill for training and equipping Islamic militants. And internationally, if the Soviets knew the extent of the CIA involvement in the region, it could have brought the two superpowers to the brink of World War III. Consequently, the training, arming, and funding of the Mujahideen was run through a series of fronts and compartmentalized so that not even those supposedly directing the operation knew its full extent. The official story is that U.S. funding, arms, and training went exclusively to the Afghanis, with the money for the foreign jihadists, or so-called Arab Afghans from which Al-Qaeda would spring, coming from the Saudis. The facts on the ground, however, tell a very different story. Within this group of Arab Afghans was an even smaller group centered around Osama bin Laden, a Saudi-born heir to the bin Laden family construction fortune. In Afghanistan in the late 1980s, his group consisted of about a dozen people. This group was known as Al-Qaeda, or so we are led to believe. Bin Laden himself claimed in his last authenticated interview in late 2001 that the name came from Abu Ubaidah al-Banashiri, one of his accomplices in establishing the training camps in Afghanistan. Strange, then, that 4 years later, after the 7/7 bombings in London in 2005, Robin Cook, the former leader of the House of Parliament in the UK, would write an article for the London Guardian in which he claimed Al-Qaeda, in English, the base, literally referred to the database of Mujahideen who were being handled by the CIA in Afghanistan. Some researchers have even noted that Al-Qaeda is a slang term for the toilet in Arabic, hardly a name for a shadowy global terrorist organization. Regardless of how the group got its name, the fact is that this small group of militants were nurtured with the Afghan Mujahideen by the CIA at the behest of Zbigniew Brzezinski. There is evidence of direct U.S. involvement with Osama bin Laden and the hardline Arab militants in all three areas of Operation Cyclone, including funding, training, and arming the Arab Afghans. The startling truth, according to the sworn testimony of Michael Springman, an official at the Jeddah consulate during this period, is that not only was the CIA providing training to bin Laden and his operatives, but that bin Laden was, in fact, a CIA asset, and the agency was rubber-stamping visas for his operatives to go to the U.S. for training.
And I had been told that this was a visa scam, and it certainly seemed that way to me. I was told, look, who needs the money? And the price, supposedly, for these visas was $2,500. And it was, you know, the king's barber servant to get a visa. Frères was seen filling out visa applications for people in the consulate. It was just absolutely incomprehensible to me. And people I talked to who had been there really didn't want to say much more about it. And it wasn't until I was out of the Foreign Service, when my appointment had been terminated for unspecified reasons, that I learned from three good sources. Joe Trento, the journalist, a fellow attached to a university in Washington, D.C., and a guy with expert knowledge on the Middle East who had worked for a government agency. They said, it's very simple. The CIA and its asset Osama bin Laden were recruiting terrorists for the Afghan war. They were sending them to the United States for training, for rewards, for whatever purpose, and then sending them on to Afghanistan, and most likely the problems they had with the liquor at the consulate, large amounts of it disappearing, it being sold at very high markups, and so forth, was being used to fund this.
Perhaps not coincidentally, the U.S. consulate in Jeddah, from which the CIA was smuggling operatives for bin Laden in the 80s, was the very consulate from which 11 of the 9/11 hijackers were to receive visas to enter the U.S., many of them using a special fast-track program called Visa Express, which only began 4 months before 9/11. Likewise, evidence links the CIA and bin Laden through arms sales. The suggestion that bin Laden was a customer for CIA arms has been repeated by Der Spiegel, BBC, and many other mainstream media sources. But in Simon Reeve's 1999 book, The New Jackals, one CIA source is quoted as saying that U.S. agents armed bin Laden's men by letting him pay rock-bottom prices for basic weapons. Incredibly, the funding for the Afghan operation also connects the U.S. to Osama. The U.S. provided the funding for the operation to the ISI, the Pakistani Inter-Services Intelligence, which worked closely with the CIA. In turn, the ISI, in cooperation with the CIA, distributed these funds to the Afghan Mujahideen through a front organization known as MAK, or the Bureau of Services. And one of the key men involved in arranging the finances of MAK, Osama bin Laden. After the Soviet withdrawal, Osama would take control of the organization, and it would become the base of what we now know as Al-Qaeda. In fact, the CIA, through their Pakistani proxies in the ISI, not only funded, armed, and trained Osama bin Laden, but helped spur poppy cultivation to record levels in Afghanistan in an attempt to get the Soviet troops addicted to heroin. And they created the Taliban, the hardline fundamentalist group that would take control of Afghanistan after the Soviets withdrew. And the Taliban government would become the only government in the world willing to harbor Osama bin Laden from 1996 onwards. The simple fact is that U.S. involvement in Afghanistan from 1979 onwards implicates them in the founding, funding, and training of Osama bin Laden and other hardline militant Islamists. And as we shall see, the ties extend much further into the 90s and beyond. But what does Brzezinski, one of Obama's top advisors, think about this? Does he, in retrospect, admit the danger in having nurtured Al-Qaeda and the Taliban into existence? Does he regret American involvement in the region? In his 1998 interview with Le Nouvel Observateur, he stated, "What is most important to the history of the world, the Taliban or the collapse of the Soviet Empire? Some stirred-up Muslims or the liberation of Central Europe and the end of the Cold War?" We all know the story of Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda.
Bin Laden was responsible for today's attack.
So often was that story repeated in the wake of 9/11 that the hypnotized public forgot that it was, at base, just that. A story.
If they didn't have an Osama bin Laden out there, they'd invent one.
In False Flags, The Secret History of Al-Qaeda, you will learn the truth behind that story and uncover the lies that led to the War of Terror.
Our war on terror begins with Al-Qaeda, but it does not end there.
Watch the documentary for free at CorbettReport.com/Al-Qaeda or support the filmmaker and purchase the documentary on DVD at NewWorldNextWeek.com.